knows what dangers lurk behind the closed doors of family life. It can be poison for all concerned, especially if you discover that you probably weren't cut out for marriage in the first place. I loved having sex with Edith, but after 4 or 5 years, the passion seemed to run its course, and from then on, I became less than a perfect husband. To hear Rachel tell it, I wasn't much in the parent department either. I wouldn't want to contradict her memories, but the truth is that I cared for them both in my own way. And if I sometimes found myself in the arms of other women, I never took any of those affairs seriously. The divorce wasn't my idea. In spite of everything, I was planning to stay with Edith until the end. She was the one who wanted out, and given the extent of my sins and transgressions over the years, I couldn't really blame her. 33 years of living under the same roof, and by the time we walked off in opposite directions, what we added up to was approximately nothing. I had told Rachel that my days were numbered, but that was no more than a hot-headed retort to her meddling advice, a blast of pure hyperbole. My lung cancer was in remission, and based on what the oncologist had told me after my most recent exam, there was cause for guarded optimism. That didn't mean I trusted him, however. The shock of the cancer had been so great, I still didn't believe in the possibility of surviving it. I had given myself up for dead, and once the tumor had been cut out of me, and I'd gone through the debilitating ordeals of radiation treatment and chemo, once I'd suffered the long bouts of nausea and dizziness, the loss of hair, the loss of will, the loss of job, the loss of wife, it was difficult for me to imagine how to go on. Hence Brooklyn. Hence my unconscious return to the place where my story began. I was almost 60 years old, and I didn't know how much time I had left. Maybe another 20 years. Maybe just a few more months. Whatever the medical prognosis of my condition, the crucial thing was to take nothing for granted. As long as I was alive, I had to figure out a way to start living again. But even if I didn't live, I had to do more than just sit around and wait for the end. As usual, my scientist's daughter had been right, even if I'd been too stubborn to admit it. I had to keep myself busy. I had to get off my ass and do something. It was early spring when I moved in, and for the first few weeks I filled my time by exploring the neighborhood, taking long walks in the park, and planting flowers in my back garden, a small, junk-filled patch of ground that had been neglected for years. I had my newly resurgent hair cut at the Park Slope Barbershop on 7th Avenue, rented videos from a place called Movie Heaven, and stopped in often at Brightman's Attic, a cluttered, badly organized used bookstore owned by a flamboyant homosexual named Harry Brightman. More about him later. Most mornings, I prepared breakfast for myself in the apartment. But since I disliked cooking and lacked all talent for it, I tended to eat lunch and dinner in restaurants. Always alone, always with an open book in front of me, always chewing as slowly as possible in order to drag out the meal as long as I could. After sampling a number of options in the vicinity, I settled on the Cosmic Diner as my regular spot for lunch. The food there was mediocre at best, but one of the waitresses was an adorable Puerto Rican girl named Marina, and I rapidly developed a crush on her. She was half my age and already married, which meant that romance was out of the question, but she was so splendid to look at, so gentle in her dealings with me, so ready to laugh at my less-than-funny jokes, that I literally pined for her on her days off. From a strictly anthropological point of view, I discovered that Brooklynites are less reluctant to talk to strangers than any tribe I had previously encountered. They butt into one another's business at will. Old women scolding young mothers for not dressing their children warmly enough. Passers-by snapping at dog walkers for yanking too hard on the leash. They argue like deranged 4-year-olds over disputed parking spaces. They zip out dazzling one-liners as a matter of course. One Sunday morning, I went into a crowded deli with the absurd name of La Bagel Delight. I was intending to ask for a cinnamon raisin bagel, but the word caught in my mouth and came out as Cinnamon Reagan. Without missing a beat, the young guy behind the counter answered, "Sorry, we don't have any of those. How about a Pumper Nixon instead?" Fast.